Ghosts, hauntings, UFOs, Bigfoot, aliens, shadow people, vampires, werewolves, demons. Blurring the line between the normal and the paranormal, Harrisburg Area Paranormal Society presents The Blurred Line. Here are your hosts, Sue Shinsky, John Curley, and Matt Haas.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to The Blurred Line. I'm one of your hosts, John Curley, and we have Miss Sue Shinsky with us. How's everybody doing tonight?
Hello. How's it going?
No Matt tonight. He's kid sick, so. Boo.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
That's life, you know, it's the breaks. What the heck? Well, tonight, we're going to have Mr. Bill Bean. He was on the show A Haunting, and he's author of two books, The Deliverance and Dark Forces. And he'll be calling in here shortly, and we'll be talking to him about his books and his appearance on A Haunting and telling about his horrifying ghostly encounters as a kid. So it's going to be cool.
Great. I can't wait.
Yeah, Bill is a super nice guy, man. I met him a couple times, and he actually married my brother. He became a pastor, and now he married my brother, which is pretty cool. I sat down for a long time at the wedding and talked to him, and we had a good time. Really cool guy.
Very cool. Yeah, I can't wait to talk to him. And I remember seeing The Haunting back, oh gosh, when The Haunting was on originally. It was probably about 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while since his episode aired. His episode was called, House of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's what his episode was called. And, man, it was definitely a while back. I can't remember what year it was. Maybe 2004, maybe?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Yeah. And I remember when I first seen him, I seen him on TV, and I'm like, man, I knew that guy from somewhere. And then he said he was from Baltimore, which I'm from Baltimore. And I'm like, man, I knew where I'd seen this guy at before. And my wife's like, where? I'm like, that's this guy. He was a bouncer at a nightclub we used to go to when I was a kid. It was a rock and roll heavy metal nightclub called Hammerjacks in Baltimore.
Nice name.
Yeah, it was called Hammerjacks. And Bill was a cooler, man. He was a big dude. He was a cooler in the nightclub. And I remember his hair was a little different back then. He had one of them business in the front, party in the back haircut.
Mullet Bill.
Had a nice mullet going on, but super cool guy. I'm sure all the people listening are going to enjoy him. He's a, man, one of the nicest guys you ever want to meet.
Very cool. I can't wait.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for coming on with us. We were just talking about you and telling him about you had married my brother, and we talked for a long while at the wedding. So.
Oh, yeah, it was great. Boy, I tell you, that was a wonderful and blessed occasion, and I wish them many, many years of happiness, and it was great to get to talk with you and to get to know the rest of your family. Great, great people, great family.
Yeah, it was a good time. And we, I was telling the audience that you had wrote two books. You're on two books, right? Deliverance and Dark Forces, right?
And the new one is 10 Steps to Victory. That's the latest one. And, yeah, it's amazing. And just the places that I've been and the places that I continue to travel and the different areas, the different circles that I travel in. You know, I was just returning from Minneapolis this past weekend where I was part of a professional wrestling event.
Yeah, yeah. So how'd that go? I know you were talking about going down to the wrestling event, and you were going to be in one of the matches or something, right?
Yeah, and sure was, and it went fantastic. And the big thanks, you know, I really want to thank the IWI Pro Wrestling for bringing me out there. Brian Dorn, a.k.a. Ian Xavier, great guy. He's become a great friend. You know, he's responsible for bringing me out there, and it was really a lot of fun, wonderful event. And I was involved in the main event the last match of the evening. And I actually was in that ring for quite a while, participating in the action, and I'm thankful to be back home in one piece. So it's not as easy as it looks, that's for sure.
Were you feeling it the next day?
A little bit, yeah, and it's amazing because, you know, there were some high-impact spots in there, and I give those guys a lot of credit. I'll tell you, you have to be. There's a difference. You know, being in shape, that's great, but you have to be in ring shape to be able to really perform all out in a professional wrestling ring.
Yeah, I mean, it's my friend wrestles, and he actually used to wrestle for ECW, and he's retired now, but, man, he used to go through some all kinds of injuries and knee injuries and back injuries. I mean, that guy was always banged up, man. I was like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. John, I'll tell you, I could see how it would happen, you know, very easily. I could see how that could happen because, you know, you're talking high-impact moves. Big guys moving around pretty quick in there, and when they run into each other or do things that twist legs and ankles and knees, not good.
No.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I give them a lot of credit. I really do. It's just, just amazing to, and I got a glimpse of, because I had to, early that afternoon, you know, I had to go in and we had to run through some things, you know, there at the venue. And so I got a taste of how these guys train a little bit and how they get into ring shape. And it's very grueling. It really is. I mean, I saw some of these young guys, what they were being put through as part of their training and preparation for this. And, boy, I'll tell you, it's very grueling, and I give them a lot of credit.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to do it. Maybe donate my body to science fiction.
Well, now they want to bring me back in April for a tag team grudge match. So we'll see how all that shakes out. But, we're going to have videos soon. I'm waiting on the video footage to come. When it comes, I'm going to send it to you, and I'll post it everywhere. And
awesome.
You know, just a lot of fun. It really was. And people just went crazy. You know, the whole building just went crazy at the way it, you know, that it all unfolded. And you know, I certainly gave a little bit of a beating, but I took quite a beating as well. So it was definitely the back and forth, and people were just into every second of it. It was amazing. But, you know, ultimately, you know, I say this, the message is that, you know, God always wins, and, you know, his goodness always triumphs over the evil. And that's pretty much how they laid that match out and the message in the match, and it was great.
How long does it take you to train for that?
Yeah, I just, I always, you know, and I'll tell you, I'm thinking in my head as the night's going along, you know, the match after match goes by, you're thinking, okay, you're getting closer to this now, and, you know, you can practice this all you want, but when you've got a room full of people there now, you have to really, really focus on what you're doing, where you're supposed to be, how it's going to go, and that was a little nerve-wracking as it drew closer. Because, you know, it involved me getting up from my table, which was on a stage, which was near the ring, and getting up from the table and actually, you know, coming into the ring and then engaging these guys, you know, and the one guy comes at me and I hit him with a shoulder block, he goes down. The other guy comes at me, he hit him with a shoulder block, he goes down, and it's a lot of action after that.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to make sure that you're in the right places, because it's very easy for something to go wrong very, very quickly, and everything just worked out perfectly.
That's good. Great. I props to you, because, yeah, it's
It was nerve-wracking, I'll tell you, you know, and afterwards I had a reporter come up. There was a reporter there at the matches from the St. Paul Tribune or something like that. You know, he'd come up and he said, "Mr. Bean, are you a wrestler?" I said, "No." I said, you know, he says, "Well, you certainly look like you've been in there." For I said, no, that was the first time I've ever been in the ring engaged in a real match. I mean, I'd been trained years ago. I went through a little bit of training from Dwayne Gill, the guy that mimicked Goldberg, you know, they called him Gilbert, WWE, yeah. And Dwayne, you know, had some training for me. I received a little bit of training from him, I think, in 1993. And, you know, that was certainly the last time that I'd stepped into any type of wrestling ring. And it was just amazing. It really was. But you have to focus. And I give those guys a ton of credit because, you know, not only do you have to have the physical aspect going and being in shape for this, but you really have to have the mental clarity and concentration to be in there to focus on where you have to be, what you need to do, and how you're going to do it, and how everything unfolds. And then when you have four, five, six people in the ring, you have to make sure that everybody's working together in there so nobody gets hurt.
It's almost like dancing.
It really is. It goes in steps. And, you know, for instance, at the end part, and you'll see when I said in the video, you know, the one guy's holding my arms behind me. You know, at first he's choking me out with my shirt. And then he's holding my arms. And the other guy is, he goes outside of the ring, he grabs a chain, he's going to hit me with his chain. And as he's drawing back to hit me with his chain, then another, you know, a good guy comes and stops him. And so the good guy stops that, and then I have to turn. So then I turn and turn the guy that's holding my arms right into the other good guy that's coming from across the ring to nail him to get him off of me. So everything has to, timing has to be right there. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no second chances in something like this. So the timing has to be precise. And it was, and it came off very nice that they, you know, they end up jumping all those guys. And then the thing culminated with the tag champs. They were called Tall and Small. They shoot one of the guys into the ropes, and this guy's about 340 pounds, and they shoot him into the ropes. Now I have to run and shoot in between them, and as this guy's coming off the ropes, I hit him with a Polish hammer and then knocked him out of the ring. And so then they do it again with the other guy, and that same thing. I have to run back around and shoot through them and hit the other guy with a Polish hammer and knock him out. So it was amazing how it all turned out. And then you have the verbal sparring once they get outside of the ring to build up something that might happen the next time. So, and maybe in the future, you can have me back, and we'll have Brian Dorn on, and he could talk about, you know, they want to bring me back in April. And maybe he could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, so you just never know. My life has been such an incredible journey, and I have been blessed to be able to go into so many different genres and so many different types of circles of people. And I have been accepted anywhere and everywhere that I've gone, and it's such a tremendous blessing. So this was just yet another experience in the journey.
Yeah, I mean, jump into the paranormal aspect of everything. Starting out when you were a kid living in the Glen Burnie home, which you wrote a book about, Dark Forces.
Yeah.
When you first moved into that place, you know, what little incidents started to happen where you thought, well, like, maybe this place is haunted, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, in my book, Dark Force, I talk about the events that took place in a three-bedroom ranch-style home that was located in Glen Burnie, Maryland, in a community called Herondale. And we lived there from 1970 to 1980. And looking back, I don't know how in the world we did it. I really don't. I don't know how we stayed in there that long. But it started, and this house, let me tell you, I was four when we moved into the house. And my first recollection, I was very frightened, even at the age of four, just looking at the house, because the house had a semi-dilapidated appearance, and it just had a very ominous look and feel about it. And I knew something was wrong, you know, right from the very beginning. And so my sister said she felt the same as well. You know, I was four, she was 13. My brother was one. And the house was located at the bottom of a downhill cul-de-sac with a very long and large and deep ravine behind it. And just entering into the house, you know, it just had this very, very heavy vibe to it. You know, as soon as you walked in, you'd walk in through the front door, and just it was dark. There was this dark brown paneling on the walls, almost black in color. And again, it just had this heavy, heavy feel to it, and just not good at all. So I knew right from the very beginning that something was frightening me, you know, at the age of four, so I knew something wasn't right. And my mom was the first to have an experience in the house. It took place while she was unpacking boxes in the living room. My dad had taken us, again, my older sister, younger brother with him, to his parents' house for the day to allow my mom to unpack and organize in what she felt would be peace. And it was during the course of this that she felt a presence, and she thought that it was my dad sneaking back in to play a joke on her. He had the type of sense of humor, and she spun around fully anticipating on seeing him, and there was shock. You know, nothing was there. And as you can imagine, she was startled by it, taken aback, and eventually able to collect herself. But it wasn't long after that that one of the bedroom doors slammed shut by itself, and that was enough to make her go outside and wait until we returned. So that's where it began. You know, with this feeling of presence and then a door slamming. And it gradually escalated into violent physical attacks on us for many years by these demonic entities, and it greatly contributed to the destruction of my family.
Wow. I know I did read your book, Dark Forces, and I have to tell you, there's a lot of things in there. It's one of those books you read where it just grabs your attention, and you don't want to put it down when you're reading it. You're like, wow, this is a lot of stuff that happened to a family. And you just lived through it, and you stayed there. Like I probably would have got up and got up out of there, but you guys actually stayed there and fought your way through it, which was wow. I mean,
I can tell you this: that my parents were married in '56. My sister was born in '57. There was another child born in '63 that didn't live, and I was born in '66. And by all accounts, they were, you know, my parents were happy. My parents were good people. They were not religious people. They believed in God, but we never attended church as children. We were not baptized or anything like that. But my dad, who was a very good, hardworking family man, his demeanor had changed dramatically, you know, soon after moving in. And he had turned into a raging alcoholic who began to physically abuse my mother on a regular basis between 1973 and 1975 and nearly killed her on several occasions. And again, I have no doubt that, you know, and my parents were social drinkers, but it wasn't long after moving in, his character did begin to change, and he began to drink very heavily and stay out at the bars all night, things of that nature. And so I, based on what I saw, I have no doubt that these demonic forces were actually able to fuel his rage towards my mom. And I give praise to God that, you know, it's miraculous that he didn't kill her during that time period, because it was escalating to that point, and he left us in 1975. And when he left us in such a bad way that, you know, we had to go on welfare. My mom was very ill also the entire time of living there. And she couldn't work. She had high blood pressure, which led to a series of strokes, which ultimately led to kidney failure. And she couldn't work. And so we were on welfare, and it was just horrible. It's a horrible way to live. And we ended up losing the house. And the house was auctioned off in the front yard. And the man that bought the house in the public auction was aware of my mother's situation and allowed us to stay there on a pay-as-you-can-when-you-can basis. That's how, you know, and why we stayed. And that's the most frequently asked question, you know, why'd you stay? Well, we didn't have a whole lot of options. My mom, my beloved grandmother, my mother's mother, Dora Harvey, she wanted us to stay with her, but she and my step-grandfather shared a one-bedroom apartment. And my my aunt wanted to come stay with her, but she had a husband and 8 children. So, you know, my mom was a very proud and private woman, and she did not want to burden anyone but us. And furthermore, I feel that each and every one of us came under demonic oppression at various times while living there. And we all did things that were way out of character. And it seemed like after a while we were just bound by those entities to where we couldn't go anywhere. And it really is amazing, and it didn't hit me until I sat down to write Dark Force that, you know, having to relive these things and place myself back in to some of those situations. And I just thought, to myself, how in the world did we ever, you know, endure it for that long? Just, we became very zombie-like, you know, so we were just surviving each and every day. And these things would attack us with such frequency, and especially my mother. She suffered more than any other person I've ever seen in my life, and she suffered attacks up until the time of her untimely death. And again, I believe those demonic forces greatly contributed to her death and other deaths in the family.
Now, you had mentioned, it's heavy. I mean, you had mentioned that she was very sick. Now, was she sick before they moved into the home?
I heard what you said until the last part.
Oh, was she sick before you guys moved into the house?
Not to my knowledge. And again, I was 4 years old and moving in. So, you know, not to my knowledge, but suddenly she was very sick and stayed that way, you know, up until the time of her death. So all those years she remained sick and never, ever got a break. And never was able to overcome that.
Now I got a question, Bill. Do you think not being baptized kind of maybe attributed to something in the house was able to take advantage of you guys and attack you?
Well, everything happens for a reason. And I found out after writing the book that that someone on my mom's side of the family many, many, many years ago had actually conjured up those evil forces. And my mother had supernatural experiences in her childhood as well. So she had a lifetime of it. And so that evil force actually led us to that house where evil was already present and manifest, because the area itself has a lot of evil going on. I still to this day get messages from many people in the area telling me about their experiences and what they're going through. And so due to those circumstances, that's why it was so severe for my family and I, that we were actually led there by that evil that, you know, and then evil was already manifest. So we were in the middle of this storm, and that's why it was so severe for us.
I have to tell you, at the wedding, my father, you know, commented on his that the preacher was, he was a very nice guy. I said, yeah, so Bill lived in Herondale in Glen Burnie, and my father lived in Herondale too as a kid. And he said, yeah, he said, really? I said, yeah, he lived in a haunted house there. I said, he was, you know, on TV and stuff. He's like, really? He said, hey, he said, you knew the house we lived in Herondale was haunted too. I was like, really? He goes, yeah, man. He said, it was a really scary house. Yeah. He said he lived there like 2 weeks.
Again, John, yeah, I get these messages. I still get them from people, and there is definitely something to it. A friend of mine did some research into the area, and apparently there was a structure, and it's still standing, I guess. I've never been there, but they say it's in the middle of the woods, about 2 miles south from where that house is, and it's called the Wishing Rock. And according to my friend's research, Native American tribes used to gather and worship at this structure, saying that it had supernatural powers. And if that's true, well, then maybe it's possible that that is a gateway or vortex or doorway or something for these entities to come through and really affect the area.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. My uncle lived in Herondale too, which is really strange. And
wow, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and my cousin started hearing weird voices in his head in the home, and was hearing voices, and he told my uncle things, and One day he came in and my cousin killed himself. He was only 18 years old, and he killed himself in that house. And my uncle moved out of there, but he said he was hearing voices and things like that. It was really strange. It's really weird.
The area is evil, absolute. I mean, and every once in a while, I'll have to pass through there. Now, I don't live in the area any longer, but every once in a while, I'll pass through there, and there's a highway that runs parallel, you know, Ritchie Highway. And
hey, Ritchie Highway.
I'll go down Ritchie Highway, you know, and I'll look down, and it just has the same look and feel as it did all those years ago. And you never see any cars in front of the place. The shades are always down. It just has the same vibe, look, feel to it that it did. And I just get such a horrible feeling going back into the area.
Have you ever been back to the house since you fled out of there?
I have not. I was once offered a very large sum of money to return to the house with a camera crew for 10 days, and I turned it down. And the producer said, "Wow, your story must be real. You know, turn down that kind of money." I have no desire to go back. The only way I would go back would be as a man of God to help out people. You know, if they were in trouble and if they requested my help to come and help them, that would be the only way I'd ever go back. You know, just going back. Fox 45 News did an interview with me. Near the area a couple years ago, and just going back near it just flooded me with so many horrific memories. I thought, I just can't do it. I don't want any parts of this.
Wow. I mean, that must have really been a big incident in your life where, you know, you don't ever want to go back there. You know, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and again, the only way I would go back is if, you know, people were living there and they were really in a bad situation and they needed my help as a minister to come, then I would go. But other than that, no, I have zero interest in ever going back and setting foot on that ground.
Well, is there a family that lives there now?
The house has changed hands many times over the years, and it sat empty for a period of time. And one guy I heard, bought the house, moved in, lived there for 6 weeks, and put the house right back on the market and ended up losing, like, I think $36,000 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And and then another family lived there from, I think, 91 to 94. And when my A Haunting episode, House of the Dead, aired on Discovery Channel, two of the family members were watching that night. And I was contacted by one of them, a young man named Edward Harden. And he contacted me and he said, "I just knew that that was the house that we lived in." And he began to tell me, you know, what he and his family had experienced. They too had experienced many paranormal, supernatural events while living in the house. They were not physically attacked like my family and I were, but they had many bizarre, unexplainable paranormal experiences that took place during the course of their living in the house.
Wow, that is creepy. I mean, just think all these years and, you know, the evil just still resides in that location and, you know.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he told me a story that his mom went in to use the bathroom and when she tried to come out, something was holding the door shut. She couldn't get it open and she was panicking and she screamed, and he and his brother ran down to try and get the door open. They couldn't get it open. And she's screaming, you know, and they actually had to run out and get an axe and chop the door down to get her out of there. And he said there was nothing, there's no reason for anything to have been holding that door shut like that. You know, it was not that the lock malfunctioned or the door wouldn't open because something broke in the door handle or whatever. He said there is nothing, they can't explain, you know, why and what was holding that door shut. And then another thing he said was that he and his brother had rifles, and the mother, she did not like guns and did not want guns in the house. So the only way that they could bring the weapons in to the house would be if they disassembled them. So he and his brother would disassemble the rifles, bring them in, interestingly enough, they shared the same room that my brother and I shared. And they would disassemble their weapons, put it in the closet there, and would wake up the next morning and the weapons would be reassembled.
Wow. That is that's pretty wild.
Many other. Oh, yeah. They told me many other things. And ended up doing a meeting with him, and very nice young man, and did an interview with him for my second book, Delivered. And so it was nice to have someone else to go on the record and say, hey, look, you know, we live there, and this is what happened to us. So, and also, a couple years ago, about a year and a half ago, I guess it was, I spent a day with a forensic psychiatrist, and he was, I guess, you know, did an evaluation of my mental stability and my truthfulness. And I took a 567-question test, and again, this man was there evaluating me the whole day, and I was deemed to be truthful and sane. So, you know, for anyone out there that would think, wow, this guy's telling a heck of a story, it's a true story, and I'm sorry to say it. I wish it were a made-up thing. I wish I could go back in time and change some things, especially when it comes to the suffering of my mother, but I can't. So all I could do now is just continue to move forward and allow God to work through me to help other people. So, you know, as bad as my life was then, my life is very, very good, very, very blessed now, and I can never thank God and praise God enough for that.
Now, I know you would, I read your book, and certain parts of books, you said that whatever was in the house affected, like, the animals. Like, one of your animals actually just disappeared, like, was ripped apart, and there was, like, fur everywhere. You never found the body, right?
Yeah, that's true. That happened around the 4th of July, 1979. I guess it would have been the 4th of July. My brother and I were in Florida at the time. My brother wanted to visit my dad. I had developed a burning hatred for my dad, I'm sorry to say, after everything had taken place. And, you know, like I said, he left us in 1975, and I very much hated my dad for many years. Mm. And we'd gone to Florida. My brother wanted to see him, so I ended up going with my brother. But my mother had a new man in her life at that time, and we also had a little black poodle. And they had gone, her new boyfriend, Richard, had taken her to see fireworks. My aunt, Joyce, had come over, and she had a quiche hound, and like a husky, and very friendly dog, and left the dog in the yard. Now, she had, at that point in time, she had split with her husband, and she had a new man in her life as well. And so she and her boyfriend and my mother and her boyfriend had all gone out to see fireworks. And the two dogs were left in the backyard, fenced-in yard, four-foot-high fence. The dog had never gotten out before. And when they returned from the fireworks, the quiche hound was still there and looked traumatized. And our dog was gone. No trace, you know, nothing. Not a trace. And so they searched the neighborhood late into the night, no sign of the dog. And then they decide to try and get some rest, and they're going to get up the next morning and resume the search. And they wake up to a horrific sight the next day of just hunks and hunks of black hair, which they assumed was the dog's. The dog's hair, you know, the dog was named Fuzzy, and they assumed that it was Fuzzy's hair, and it was everywhere. It was even under the bed covers and in the bedroom and leading in the hallway and going into the bathroom and kitchen sinks. It was just horrific,
That's
and we
horrible.
Never saw the dog again, and it was very, very difficult to write about, you know, that part as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, our pets, we had several pets while living there over the years, and they were all affected in adverse ways.
Wow. And we actually been involved with a case where a dog had its spine crushed by something in the house. The veterinarian couldn't even explain how the dog's spine could have been crushed the way it was. The lady said that, you know, they were just laying in bed sleeping, and all of a sudden the dog let out this loud yelp and couldn't walk. They took it to the vet, and its spine was literally crushed.
Yeah.
It was paralyzed. Yeah, and, you know, the house was really, really haunted, and they said, you know, we were getting really negative EVP saying it wanted to kill the lady that was in the house.
Yeah.
And I mean, they actually wound up fleeing the house. They couldn't take it anymore, and they left. But I mean, it's kind of similar to some of the things that, you know, happened with you, which is really weird. And a lot of the negative cases that we've came across, a lot of them are just like the case, you know, like the situation you were in. They're almost all the same. It's really strange.
Yeah, and this is why it's so important for people, and again, I'm not beating anybody over the head with the Bible, and I'm not telling people they're hellbound if they don't do this or do that. However, it is very important for each and every one of us to have our own personal connection with God, make him first in your life, and really mean it. Let him guide you, and ask for him to keep his giant warrior angel surrounding and protecting you at all times. Because each and every one of us are in spiritual warfare on a daily basis. Most people don't realize this, but it's true. And so we have to be on our guard each and every day.
Yeah, we definitely do, because you never know when the situation might be yours, you know.
Yeah.
It could happen very
and
easily.
We don't wish that, you know, exactly, and I wouldn't wish it on anyone. You know, I've actually had people in the past, some young kids, say, oh, that's so cool. I'd love to have something like that. And I said, no, you wouldn't. Absolutely not. I mean, this is not cool. This is something that I wouldn't wish on anyone. And, you know, so again, people really need to understand the severity of this, which when you're in this kind of demonic oppression, which leads to possession sometimes, this could be life-altering and life-threatening as well. So people really need to realize that, and this is super serious. And for people out there who are doing the ghost hunting and things of that nature, I just say be very, very careful, because you're swimming amongst the sharks.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to come across.
Exactly. You're exactly right. And once it happens, you can't just walk away and give it back. You know, that's when the battle will start. And when that happens, you know, the only thing that can be done is to really turn to God and ask God for help and guidance, and ask God to send someone that God can work through to help to deliver them.
I remember, and John, you'll remember this, that we went to a case once where, you know, we had heard some things that were going on, and we went in, and it was me and John and another investigator, and we went up to one of the bedrooms, and all of a sudden, her back was on fire. This was in February. She was wearing a t-shirt and a thick sweatshirt, and she's like, come here to the bathroom. She had been scratched down her back from her shoulder toward the middle of her back through her sweatshirt. I mean, and we didn't think anything of it. You know, before we went to the house, we didn't think, you know, this was just,
absolutely,
you just don't know.
No. And
yeah,
these are the things that are very, very real. And my heart just breaks for people like that. Mm-hmm. I get these messages and calls from people every day.
Yeah, and that same incident, you know, at one point in the night before that happened, I'm Catholic, so I was wearing a St. Michael's medal, and I felt like it drew tight around my neck, you know, in the middle of the night, and I'm like, man, I felt really weird. Like, I grabbed it, and I was like, I felt like it drew tight, like, almost choking me, you know, and I grabbed it, and I never said anything to Sue or Diana about it, and after, you know, a couple of days went by, Diana had contacted me. She was the investigator that got scratched, and she was like, you know, before I got scratched, my St. Michael's medal was, you know, tightened around my neck. And I was like, oh, wow. I said, I never told you, but that happened to me. I thought maybe I was imagining things, but it really did happen. And it really freaked me out. I was like, wow, I mean, I can't believe that, you know, something.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's absolutely horrible. And it's something that, again, you know, you don't wish on anyone. And for people to be in that type of situation, boy, I'll tell you.
Yeah, we were only in there for a few hours. They have, you know, the people that live there have to live there. So
I mean, yeah, and you know, again, what happens is people, they become withdrawn, and then they just start to give up. You know, they start to lose hope, and their defenses come down more, and they get weaker and weaker and weaker, and that's exactly what these demonic forces want. Because it's divide and conquer, and once the people are to the point to where they're just absolutely done as far as not being able to fight back, well, then it's all over. You know, and that's the objective, is to destroy mankind. That is the objective of demons.
Yeah, it's disheartening, but there's also, you know, people who spread light like you, so...
Well, that's the good news, you know, and again, it's all about faith, and God does work miracles because you are speaking with one. You know, I mean, I am a living, breathing, walking miracle from God. I can never thank him and praise him enough for what he's done for me, you know, for what he's done, for what he's doing, and for what he's going to do. And as horrible as my life was, as horrible as the situation was, as much loss of life there has been in my family over the years, through it all, I am far more blessed now than I was ever cursed, and my life is a blessing and a gift each and every day. So I always pray that God works through me to help somebody, and, you know, probably for the last 4 years, God has worked through me to help many, many people all around the country and even different parts of the world. And it's just been a wonderful, amazing journey, and I just, there's nothing that I would rather be doing than to, you have God working through me to help others to come through these things, to get through it, and then go on to have peace in their life and be able to have a quality of life and enjoy life once again.
Yeah, I remember reading your book, and your uncle actually got you started in religion, right? Like, you never really got into it until your uncle had kind of brought you into it, right?
Yeah, that's correct, you know, and it was very empowering because, again, you know, even as a child, even going through all those things, I still had like a blind faith in God. Never read the Bible, didn't know anything about the Bible or God in written form. I just always believed that he existed, and I knew he was real. And but it wasn't until 1979, at the age of 13, that I had a very important discussion with my Uncle Cliff, who lived in Florida. And he is the one responsible for the seeds of faith and for me realizing, and he made me realize that we can get rid of this junk out of our life. That, you know, when we make our connection with God very strong and we truly make him first, then God can and will work miracles in our lives. And so basically what I did was, you know, I took that advice to heart, and little did I know that I would be engaging in my first battle with those demonic forces upon returning home from that trip. So getting back, you know, I ended up engaging in warfare with these things, and I recall calling them out in the name of Jesus Christ, commanding them to show themselves. And at one point, the entire house began to shake, and things were falling off the walls. And I was 13. There were five adults there with me. They were absolutely terrified. I should have been terrified as well, but I just witnessed my mom being picked up and hurled through the air by an unseen force. And she was hurled across her bedroom, and she landed up into her makeup table, and she was scratched, cut open, and just really, I was enraged to see my mother hurt that way. And I just, for all of the years of abuse that we had sustained from these entities, something in me just snapped. And I just became this warrior. And I recall grabbing a Bible. And at that point in time, for the last 16 months we lived there, we had a Catholic priest involved. And it had gotten to the point where he was bringing mason jars full of holy water to the house. And I recall grabbing a Bible and a jar of that holy water and just commanding these things to show themselves in the name of Jesus Christ, and it became chaotic. And at one point, several feet in front of me in the living room, they did show themselves. And four entities, one had the look of a man, but not really a man. It was just black hair, black beard, chalky white skin, and black eyes. And this is one of two entities that were regularly physically attacking my mother. And the second had red hair, clean shaven, again, that chalky white skin, black eyes.
Wow.
Scar down the left side of its face. And then another one was a female, long dark hair, long black, I guess you call it gown, you know, old looking thing. Again, that chalky white skin, just a sinister looking individual. It's kind of looked like a witch. And the fourth was this dark force entity, which was a black hooded entity with glowing red eyes. And we saw clearly for several seconds in like greenish, yellowish beams of light. And then suddenly they just dissipated. And as they dissipated, all of the chaotic things that were taking place had stopped. And we got out of there and went to my mother's boyfriend's house for the night. And he begged us to come stay with him. And my mother just did not want to give up. She didn't want to leave. And then eventually, in December of 1980, we were forced to leave when we woke up one morning to the pungent odor of burning wires, and every electrical appliance in the house had burned up at the same time. Everything was gone. It was fried. And my brother had a pet, I think it was like a hamster or guinea pig or something, in the cage that was found dead. And really, that was enough. Finally, whatever spell they had over my mom and us as well was broken on that day. And we had gone and moved in with my mother's boyfriend. My brother and I didn't have any experiences while living there. However, I was not aware of this until a few years ago when I had a meeting with my mother's boyfriend. And he told me that she'd made him promise not to tell us that she was still having those attacks and experiences up until the time of her untimely death. You know, once we left there, it wasn't long after leaving that two tragedies occurred. And my beloved grandmother died first from a series of heart attacks. And then 2 months and 2 days later, my beloved mother, Patricia Bean, died from a cerebral hemorrhage at the age of 44. You know, and these were the two closest people to me, and they were suddenly gone. And it was just devastating, you know.
That's so young.
As the years had gone by, my father, William Bean Sr., was shot to death at the age of 48. So most of my family's gone now. Mm.
Jesus. That's terrible.
And so for many years, I walked around a very bitter and dark and empty person who really didn't want to live. I was seeking death for such a long time. And I just lived in darkness. I lived in negativity. I can recall waking up, you know, thinking what horrible thing is going to go wrong today, and bad things would continue to happen. It was like I had a black cloud over me. It was like I was cursed. And this did not change until 2008, and that is when my wife and I made a conscious decision to make God first in our life. We got baptized together, and when we got baptized together as man and wife, that's when everything stopped. All the, you know, because some of that stuff continued in, you know, right on up until that time. I can't tell you how many shows I had been on in the past, you know, when I first started talking about all this, that, you know, there would be technical difficulties on the show. The hosts would hear voices, or they would see manifestations in the studio and things like that. And so this stuff was still kind of going on a little bit. But it wasn't until being baptized in 2008 that it all stopped. And after that, my life truly changed for the better. And then God put an anointing on me, a calling to go and help other people. And that's exactly what's been taking place, you know. And I've probably, God's probably worked through me to help thousands of people over the last probably 4 or 5 years. And it's just been an amazing journey. So now I see each and every day as a gift and a blessing, and I declare victory in each and every day. I expect to win. I refuse to lose. And even if something doesn't go the way that I hope that it would, I still praise God because I know He's got a better plan. And that's how I live my life. I love God with everything, every fiber of my being. And I love my friend, neighbor, and brother as I would myself. I can't judge anyone because if I point a finger, three can point back at me. So people need to realize that there is no perfect one that works or walks the face of the earth. And we're all human beings. We all make mistakes. And we need to just try and build each other up, not tear each other down.
I agree 100%. Yeah. You know, the power of God is a powerful thing. It's the most powerful thing. And if you believe in God, He's going to show you the light, you know. It really is.
Exactly right. You know, and again, God has made a way for me in my life where there seemed to be no way. He has worked miracles, continues to work miracles. So I don't even worry about things anymore, John. I just have to give it over to God. You know, and look, I could sit here all night and say how great life is and how blessed I am, which is true. But that doesn't mean that I don't have problems like everyone else. You know, we have problems that come up in life. We have obstacles and we have situations. This is part of being alive. This is part of being a human being in this life. And this is precisely, you know, when we have these types of crisis and situations, this is when we turn to God and we give it to Him and we trust in Him and He will make the way. I always say that faith and fear do not exist together. They are not compatible. They don't go together. So if we are in total faith, we won't have any fear.
I agree with you 100% on that, Bill. That's for sure. And I think in a lot of these cases where there are demonic things going on, that, you know, these demonic entities have just oppressed them so much and, you know, it's broken their will, you know. And like the case we were telling you about where we had things happen to us, I also read in your book there's a lot of similarities with your case and this case that we did where the whole family gets sick a lot, physically sick. I mean, illness after illness after illness after illness.
Oh, yeah. I can believe it.
And it just keeps happening to them. And, you know, I talked to the mother quite a few times. I talked to her on a regular basis, and she's just like, I don't know why, you know, we're always getting sick all the time. I'm like, it's because of this entity that's in your house. It's physically draining you.
Sucking the life out of you.
Yeah. You know, I said it's exactly the same thing that happened in your case with your house. I mean, I believe it.
And I, you know, as you're saying it, I could see how something like that, and it's the exact same thing, you know, because even my mom was very ill the entire time living there, but I was also very ill. I suffered a lot of illnesses, and it would always happen after being physically attacked. And I would feel like I had the flu, and I would have these fevers and body aches and flu-like symptoms all the time. So I suffered like that for most of the time of living in the house. So I totally get it. I totally understand it.
I was going to say, I do have a question. You know, there are some people that believe that there are no quote-unquote ghosts. You know, when you die, you go to one of two places. And I was just curious what your views on that are.
Yeah, well, and it's a very good question. And I sort of have an answer. I don't have the clear, definitive understanding of this, but I do know it's true. There are such things as ghosts. And what they are, I don't know. If it's some sort of imprint, you know, how like a DVD player would loop over and over and over and have this residual type of event, or if it's some sort of dimensional thing or something, I don't quite understand it. But I do believe that they are real. However, I would have to say in many cases, and certainly based on my experiences and the experiences of people that I have gone to help, demons can also pose as your long lost relative or loved one or little boy, little girl, whatever, you know,
to get anything to get in.
Sure, the devil is a master of disguise, so this is where we really have to rely on God to give us the spiritual discernment to know which is which. And this is why I say to people, be very, very careful in going into this ghost hunting, because it's literally like swimming with sharks. You just don't know. And unless God provides you with that spiritual discernment, you are in harm's way.
Yeah, I believe that. I know I wasn't a very religious person until I started doing paranormal investigations. And I started doing them, and I experienced things that I never thought that I would experience. And it really led me to going to church and getting into the Bible and reading things. I mean, it really enlightened me that there is something else that we're not aware of out here. That.
Oh, yeah. There's no question that, you know, just as surely as there is a magnificent, wonderful God, and his name is Yahweh, and just as surely as he exists, and he is the creator of all things, and he does love us, and he doesn't leave us, sometimes we leave him, just as surely as he exists, there is a devil, an adversary out there that Yahweh allows to be here. He allows him to be here because of our free will. God would love for each and every one of us to come back to him and make him first in our lives, but it's by our choice. He gave us free will. We're free to do whatever we want to do. And even if people choose that they want to align with the enemy, well, God gave us that free will. So that's what it's all about. That's why the enemy is still here. And everything on this planet is about learning lessons. It's all about the journey. And in the journey, it's all about knowledge, learning the lessons, and correcting some things when we make mistakes.
Yeah, it's a very good point. I mean, point in belief, I should say. I know from my own experiences, I have told John about this, and people listening, I apologize, you're hearing it again. I went through a pretty profound paranormal experiences my entire childhood, and thankfully, where I am now, it doesn't happen very often, and not to the severity that it did then either. But I was virtually terrorized for the first 11 years of my life. And I don't think that people who have not gone through something, and yours was much more profound than mine was, but I can kind of relate a little bit. And I think sometimes that people just don't understand unless they've gone through it.
You're exactly right. And see, that's why it is so... I guess why it's so powerful, why God works so powerfully through me, is it makes that instant connection with those who are going through it, and they know what I've been through, and they have that feeling of authenticity, knowing that that I really have been there. And so when you gain the trust of someone like that, it's very powerful because, you know, it's like a light at the end of the tunnel for them.
Yeah.
And then they can believe and start to trust. And then, you know, that's part of the process, part of the healing and deliverance process for these people.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful thing to see people delivered from this evil garbage.
It is. Well, I think that we're going to take a quick break. And we'll be back in a couple minutes. And everybody stay tuned. We're speaking with Bill Bean. This is A Blurred Line on Sepia Radio.
Hi, Bill.
It's great to be back. Thank you, guys. I've enjoyed being here, and I really appreciate you having me on. I certainly look forward to coming on the next time. But it is amazing the amount of people that had exposure to that house and to situations and attacks. You know, I've had a lot of family members and friends suffer actual physical attacks, and we were just talking about something that took place in 1978. With one of my friends, and I recently saw him, and we reflected back on that. He never forgot it, and he'll never forget it. Coming home from school in 1978, and my friend John was with me, and we came into the house, and my dad had built a bar, so when you come into the house to the right, as you're coming in the living room on the right, there was a bar there. And on that bar was a butterscotch-colored bottle, like a genie bottle type thing, and it had liquor in it. And now my dad had left this at 75, but, you know, my mom left that bottle on the bar, and he had other things back there as well. And on that bar, John decided that he wanted a drink, and he went behind the bar and picked up the bottle, and as he picked it up, it just exploded in his hands. And I mean, the liquor and the glass, everything just went everywhere.
Jeez.
And we ran out of there, and he never, ever forgot it, you know, and he still tells that story. And other friends had attacks as well. You know, my friend Dallas was picked up by an unseen force by his throat and held about 6 inches off the floor.
Ooh.
And we could not pull him down, and then he was dropped. And, you know, that's another, he's in his 50s now. He'll never, ever forget that. Still talks about it to this day.
Wow, the hair standing up my arms talking about that. That's creepy.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I'll never forget the look on his face, I'll tell you that.
I bet. I probably didn't, the look in his pants afterwards on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, and again, these are two incidents of many that took place with, you know, various friends or family members over the years. And, you know, the amount of suffering that took place and really the amount of bloodletting as well. There was a great deal of bloodletting that took place there. Over the years while living there, I'm sorry to say, certainly between my parents and other relatives as well, it's just mind-boggling, just reflecting back on some of these things. And, you know, I recall one of these terrible domestic fights between my parents, you know, my dad just absolutely, you know, beat my mom terribly, and glass was everywhere. And as a young child, I stepped on a piece of glass and I sliced my foot wide open, and ended up walking to the next street over with a piece of glass in my foot still. And my best buddy on the next street, you know, his mom was a nurse, and she saw that, and she, you know, got the glass out and cleaned the foot and took care of it and all that, and wanted to know how and why I did it. And I certainly didn't tell her, you know, how it really happened. And just things like that were just horrific, you know. And I carried that burning hatred for my dad for many, many years, but I was so happy to be able to have forgiven him before his untimely death, which he was shot to death in 1987 at the age of 48. And I was thankful that I was able to forgive him before that, so we had a semblance of a relationship, you know, before his untimely death. And so I urge people, whatever the situation or circumstance is, please drop your hatred for whomever it may be, because when we hate, we fill our spirit with darkness and with just heaviness. That it, the hatred is just all poison. It is a spiritual poisoning. And so it's very, very important for us to forgive. We don't have to forget. But it's very important to forgive, and it's all about moving forward in life. So we cannot truly move forward until we drop our hatred for whomever it may be.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Really is, because I think the world would be a better place if a lot of people did drop that hatred, but unfortunately they don't. And it's kind of put this world into a shambles the way it is right now. You know?
Well, it's another clever tactic by the enemy, and it's a divide and conquer tactic. That's why in Christianity you have 34,000 different types of denominations. Since AD 30, there are 34,000 different denominations in the world, 1,200 in the United States alone, and most of these Christian denominations are not in agreement, and you factor in all the other world religions with that, and this is why you have what you have with the lines of hatred and division, because you know, you don't believe like I do, therefore you cannot be my friend, and you are hellbound because you don't believe like I believe, and these evil ones here, there, and people killing in the name of God, and they think they're doing God a service, and they are not doing God any favor or service at all. We are to love one another. God is the judge. We cannot judge each other. Everyone is different. Everyone has free will. And whatever choices are made by each and every individual is between that individual and God. And we will all stand for something that we have done. We will all stand. And for those who, you know, think that they have this kind of authority over us, to say that they make rules, they don't follow them, they will be standing in judgment as well. So this is why I try to emphasize and stress to people, love one another, build each other up, accept each other, and just move forward in life. Drop the barriers, live together in peace, and we wish good things for each other, and we try to strive to do good things, and suddenly the world will become a better place if we have that type of mindset.
Yeah,
Yeah, I have to agree. Unfortunately, it's really bad out there now. I wish a lot of people would, heed that word, but fortunately.
And that's why it's so important now, John, for people to really take a step back and realize what's going on, because the enemy is having a field day. He is in his delight to see men turned against each other in this way, to see so much war and chaos and horrible things on the planet. Satan and his minions are loving this, and this is where we have to just step back and say, wait a minute, let's think about the message that Jesus had for us and how he lived and the example he was showing, and isn't this how we should try and do it in loving one another and trying to be kind and respectful and tolerant with each other and striving to make a positive difference in helping one another.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, something has to come to an end the way things are now, that's for sure. Just a lot of this world has really gotten bad with the war and I mean, just people just taking life for granted. I mean, they really have.
There's no question about it. But, you know, again, the enemy is prevalent everywhere. And that is with TV, with movies, with internet, with magazines, with music, some books, everywhere. And the world is made up of mostly followers. There are very few good, strong leaders left in the world. Mm-hmm. And so people are looking for someone to show them the way. And so the young kids, we see the breakdown of the families, a lot of single parent homes, and the kids are turning to the TV and the movies and the internet and everything else, the music, to show them the way. And it is planting bad seeds, and it is really, really corrupting the minds of some of the young people and even some of the older people as well. And they just do the most disturbing, shocking things, and they think that that's cool because they saw that on a reality TV show. And things of that nature. So the enemy knows full well what he's doing with the programming. And I find it interesting that people don't pick up on this. TV programs, programming. This is mind programming. The things that we take in is mind programming. So we have to be very, very careful, because there are, and this would be a whole other show, and you have to bring me back another time to talk about this, about how the mind can be programmed and how there are hypnotic suggestions that are sent out and people do take in, and it really contributes to people doing some just outlandish and wicked things.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I mean, look at some of these murders that are happening, and I mean, video games and these mob movies and things like that really pump people's heads up to think that, you know, these movies are real life, and they
and
go
they
out
start
and
living it.
Yeah, it desensitizes them to humanity.
Exactly. You're exactly right, and that is a very clever tactic on the part of the enemy to try and desensitize people to things and just accept things as norm, and pretty soon people will be so desensitized, and it's already happening in some places, to where if someone drops dead or if they're dying from something, people will just walk right over top of them and go about their day and leave that person to die right there in the street.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's I noticed just like driving to work, some of the people that you drive into work with have no sense of you know what they're doing out on the road. I mean, just like you're driving down the road and somebody will cut you off and almost kill you, you know, because they're in a hurry to go absolutely nowhere. You
yeah,
know? It's,
absolutely.
It really is.
And that's a sign of the times that, again, we need to stand up and say, this is not the way, and I refuse to live that way, and there is a proper way to conduct yourself, and I certainly believe the teachings of Jesus and how he conducted himself and carried himself. And, you know, there is a proper way to go about it. Now, again, everybody is free to make their choices, but we all have a moral compass. We know what is right and what is wrong. We know this. God instilled that in us. So we have that discernment to know what is right and what is wrong. And it basically comes down to that. So these people knowingly do wrong, and some take joy in it. And it just needs to stop. It really does, because too many of the youth are following along with this, and they just don't have a chance, you know, before they even have a chance to live at all. You know, they're getting caught up in this garbage, and it's just ruining their lives.
Yeah. I mean, I've noticed in the last probably 10 years or so, everybody's looking for a fight for some reason. You know, I mean, you're going down the road, exactly. Someone cuts you off, and they want to fight you, or you just you be driving down the street, and or you'll stop at a red light, and there's somebody giving you dirty looks and cussing at you and everything else. I'm like, what did I do? You know what I mean? What is possessing you?
That's a very powerful, profound thing you just said there. You know, and it is there are demons out there that literally oppress and possess people and cause them to do things that are out of character. And we'll definitely have to come back and talk about this, because people operate on frequency and vibration. So if there is someone out there who has this technology, which I absolutely believe that there are factions on the earth that have technology that can mess with the vibration and frequency of people, and again, this destabilizes people and causes them to do very erratic things. So that's a whole other topic, and I'm going to have to leave you guys. And I really, really appreciate you guys having me on. God bless both of you and your families. And I look forward to coming back again soon, and we'll have a lot more to talk about, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely want to have you back for sure. And talk about some other things and, you know, get into maybe some UFOs. And, I mean, you had talked about it at the wedding. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, the topics will be endless, that's for sure, you know, and again, for whatever reasons, God has allowed me to experience a plethora of paranormal supernatural activity during the course of my lifetime, and many divine experiences as well, and it's all a learning experience, so I look back on it now, absolutely, I wish I could change it, but I can't, so it's a learning experience, and now I'm just moving forward. And my life's work is all about helping others.
Cool.
That's great.
If you want to give out your info for your books and stuff, you can do that now, Bill, and then you can
Sure. Out
of here if you want.
And again, I want to thank both of you for having me. And it's been my honor and pleasure to be on. I look forward to coming back again soon. And for anybody, and I want to thank the listeners as well, and for anybody out there who would like to get copies of my books, please visit www.billbean.net. www.billbean.net or billbeanministries.com. Thanks, everybody. God bless. And I will be talking with you guys very soon. Just shoot me some dates, and we'll put it together for the next time.
Cool. Thank you, Bill, for coming on with us. We enjoyed your time, and I know your time is valuable, and I definitely want to thank you for coming on with us.
No, my pleasure, and God bless you guys, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Bill.
Okay. God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye-bye.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, he is a great, great guy. I mean, I can't say enough good things about him. He's a good person, and God has definitely blessed him with some of the things he's overcome in his life.
Yeah.
Unreal, you know, how God works in mysterious ways, don't he?
Yeah, and it's wild, too, because, you know, I talked about it a little bit right before we went on break, but you know, I've said it a million times, yes, you know, I've had these experiences, but I remember watching the episode of The Haunting and identifying with some of the things that were going on. Yes, it was just the TV portrayal, but that's the first time that I knew who Bill was. So it was, and it's one of the first episodes of that show that I'd ever seen. And I related so much to my personal experiences. So it was kind of powerful for me tonight to talk to him. So it's really cool.
Yeah, I finally get to have an interview with him. A lot of times I was supposed to interview him, and things never worked out, and I couldn't make the show. So it was really nice to finally interview him and talk with him live, you know, on the radio. And I talked to him live in person a couple times, and super cool guy. I mean, I can't say enough about him. He's a nice guy.
Very nice guy.
I wish him all the good things in life. You know, he's a good guy.
Yeah. Well, next week we have Mark Snyder.
And nice.
We're going to talk about some aliens.
Oh, he's going to go into the alien thing. I like aliens. Yes. Yeah.
And then the following week, I figured, and I was going to talk to you about this, I thought maybe it would be nice to open up the phone lines and have people tell their favorite ghost stories.
Oh, yeah. Sweet. I love Halloween.
Experiences. Yeah. It'll be right before a good timing.
Oh, yeah. I don't like the alien thing. I like it. I love UFOs. I think, we had Andrea on last week, and, I think a lot of paranormal things are connected with UFOs, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was talking to my husband about that the other night, and I said something. He goes, no, 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 hold on a minute. You can't just say stuff like that. You got to explain yourself. And I was shut up, and I will.
It's something connected. These black things with the red eyes, I don't think they're ghosts. But I do think there are some kind of intelligence that's not of this world. That's for sure. There's too many people seeing the same thing. I mean, how many cases have we've been on where they've all seen this black thing with red eyes? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a coincidence. You know, people are really seeing these things. It's not something made up. They are seeing them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, without a doubt. I mean, I've seen it. We've seen the glowing eyes down in Petersburg when we were there, you know, so.
Definitely curious.
What can make, you know, I don't know. There's so many unanswered questions to, you know, this paranormal thing that we're doing. And I'm left with more questions than answers.
So yeah, I was just about to say that. Like you always say, there's more questions than answers now.
It really is, because when I first started doing this, I was like gung-ho and, oh, yeah, we're going to see this, I'm going to experience that. And now I'm left with more questions than anything. I thought maybe I could find answers to some of it, but there are no answers to it. There really aren't.
Nope.
And we've both experienced a lot of things, and I can't tell you one thing from another, what it could possibly be, what created it. How it happened, what were the conditions. They're never the same, so how can you how can you explain it? How can you can't.
I know.
I think that's the main reason why scientists don't get into it, because there are no explanations for it.
Well, you can't repeat things in a controlled environment.
No. I mean, they can't recreate the situation. No one can.
And unfortunately, yet, anyway.
TV. Yeah, TV has misled a lot of people. It really has. I mean, just it really has misled paranormal investigators that, you know, have gotten into this field and think that, you know, what they see on TV is really how it is, and it's not how it is.
Yeah.
It's really not. And I was one that fell into it when I first started doing this, you know, and I'm like, this is the protocol. I mean, what protocol is better than the next? You know, if you're out in the field doing it, then you can make your own protocol of what things are.
That's why I like investigating with different groups too, because you get a chance to see how other people do things, and I think we can all help each other that way.
It'll never happen though, unfortunately, because there's too many people with these swelled heads, and you know, they just think that they're God's gift to paranormal investigating. They're really not. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, I mean, that's the holdup in the paranormal field, is people's egos. You know? Big egos.
Well, with that, it's the end of the show.
Boo! That hour and a half went quick.
I know. Well, everyone, you can check us out on Facebook at Harrisburg Area Paranormal Society. Just look it up, Blurred Line Radio, and also Harrisburg Area Paranormal Society.com. I have like speed mouth tonight. If you didn't catch all of the show, or you want to listen to past episodes of the show. You can look at blurredlineradio.podomatic.com, or you can simply go to the Sepia On Demand tab and catch past shows. And we're also on iTunes, so you have no excuse.
Yeah, and if you're listening out there, you know, please come in the Sepia chat room, chat with us, ask questions. I mean, we're here. So come on in. We like a big following, so come on in with us.
All right, John. It is the end. You going to okay. sing the song? Anyway.
All right.
All right, everybody. Have a great night. Have a great weekend. And we will see you here next Tuesday with Mark Snyder at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
All right. Night, all.